The mules are in the corral. Welcome to Mule Talk, and I'm Cindy K. Roberts, your host.
And our author, TV personality, and world-renowned mule trainer, Meredith Hodges of the Lucky Three Ranch. Okay, this is part two of Getting Down with Minis, and Meredith Hodges is going to tell us how to do it.
Well, we're going to give you an idea anyway.
Well, how did you do it?
Well, part one, we went through all of the little things that I learned with these minis and what things were different, you know, from training them than training the larger animals. And I learned that there are a lot of details that need to, you know, you need to pay attention to with these minis, because there's a lot of ways they can go wrong. Now, my experience taught me that people thought that since they're smaller, this should be easier to do because we can push them around, right? That's a common misconception, and that's what I thought until Frances taught me different. Frances has the strength of a draft mule, and she pulled me right off my feet. You know, there was no way I was going to make her do anything she didn't want to do. That was a good lesson. I needed to learn that lesson. So that taught me, you know, let's just break this down and look at it from a different perspective. Now, rather than looking at it from the perspective of, gee, I want to train them, and this little animal won't be as hard as the big animals are because I've got more leverage over them, the fact of the matter is you don't. If they decide that they don't want to do what you're wanting them to do, then if they decide to resist, they can. And they can get the upper hand on you. Now, a lot of people are very fortunate that they have some very compliant animals that they're working with, that they are calm and not very forceful people themselves. And probably the most important thing is they don't care how they go in harness as long as they do what they want them to do in harness. But when you look at it like that, you're not considering the physical development of the animal.
Right.
And so what can happen is they may be compliant in harness with their inverted neck, which I see a lot of, and a hollow back, which only becomes worse as they age. And with that hollowed neck and that hollowed back comes arthritis and other problems. Internal organs don't work the way they're supposed to, and the animal becomes unhealthy as they get older. I saw that in Franklin. I talked a little bit about Franklin and getting him, you know, when he was 20 years old. And Franklin had a U-neck and a very straight, stiff back. And that's what I see happening with a lot of these minis, is that they are very compliant and everything. And you can make them do what you want to, unless you get one like Frances, you know. But they're usually pretty compliant, and they'll do it. But they're not doing it in the best postural frame, which means there will be problems later. So in my program, I thought it would be very important, for a lot of reasons, to start them in the elbow pull, and I had to make the elbow pull small enough for my minis so that it would hold them in good posture. And just as a reminder, this does not hold their head down. The elbow pull allows free range of motion all the way to the side, all the way down, and it only allows them to raise their head high enough so it stops them right before they invert their neck and back. And that's what keeps them in good posture. It helps them to focus their engagement from the hindquarters, stretch their back, and really go into draft, as they say, when they're pulling a vehicle, because they have to pull from the hindquarters. I learned why that was really important when I got Rock and Roll. They were headed for the slaughterhouse. They had arthritis through their whole bodies, ring bones, side bones, and problems, soreness in their backs that turned out to be kissing spine. And then Rock had a completely shattered hip. But I could see how those things arose after we got the skeleton of Rock when we did the necropsy on him, we saved his bones and reassembled them. And it seems that those two mules were not moving in good posture. They were pushing out the back instead of stepping well under their torso with their hind leg and propelling their shoulders upward and forward, which is good posture movement. When I got them, they showed me that my way of training for the benefit of physical development actually helped them, because despite all of these problems they had when they started, we took x-rays periodically, and rock lasted 1 year, roll lasted 9 years, and there was absolutely no further damage done on the places where they had all of these things happening. And in fact, on rock, where he had kissing spine, the elbow pull had actually broken loose the calcium deposits that were between the spinous processes in a couple of places on his back. So it was actually therapeutic. And I talked to my vet about kissing spine, and I asked him, well, where does it come from? And he says, well, it's from us riding them, you know, and driving them out of good posture, like you say.
Yeah.
And he said, your approach to this is very therapeutic. And I said, well, what do they pose for this kissing spine problem then? And he says, well, they recommend surgery, where they go in there with a little small saw and they saw the calcium between the spinous process. And I said, well, that can't be good. And then if they've had some kind of surgery like that, how are you going to ride them? That's always going to be scarred in there. And he goes, yeah, that's right. That's the problem with it. So I said, so you would say that I could say that our way of training here is a therapeutic way that will help kissing spine as best it can be helped without surgery, correct? And he said, yeah.
Wow.
There is a reason to get your animal in his good postural frame, in good equine posture at the core, with the elements, the muscles, the tendons, the ligaments, and even the cartilage between, you know, in the joints between the bones, needs to be worn evenly the way it was designed. The way that it describes the way movement should ideally be when you're looking at physics and the movement in physics. Those bones are nothing more than lines on fulcrums. When I'm looking at them, that's what I see. And I know that when they move correctly, then they're going to have less problems. That's not to say they won't have problems, because each individual animal has a different conformation of his own. And some you have with long cannon bones, some have shorter cannon bones. Some in the hip bones are shorter, the leg bones vary in their length and everything. And that's going to affect their movement. But if you can take that animal, no matter who they are, and get them in the best physical posture, that, you know, ideal posture of their own they can have, then it's going to make that animal healthy. Now, we know, for instance, that saddlebreds, Tennessee walkers, fox trotters, and the like carry their heads very high. But that also means that they have to put their head higher than most animals do in order to get an inverted neck and an inverted back. They can still be put in the elbow pull, and when you're adjusting it, you just push their face up, you know, get it loose at the pull. Push their face up when you're making the adjustment to the point where they're just about to invert that neck, but just tie it off right there so they can't. Mm-hmm. And then, like with a quarter horse or a quarter horse mule or any of those, they're not going to be able to have their head set quite as high as a saddlebred type. And minis, oh my gosh, minis are really variable in where you want to set that elbow pull. And in the beginning, I find that most minis are in a pretty good posture to start with. They're not too bad.
Okay.
They get influenced after we've already started to drive them.
Okay.
And they have to pull. Then they've got a force behind them that causes them to raise their head and hollow their back and kind of push with their shoulders and get all out of good posture. It actually influences them negatively. When I was putting the elbow pull on these minis, I could keep them pretty loose so that they weren't even really being used much until I hitched them up. And then I could see what it was doing to them, and that's how I know what it does and why it's so important to get that posture established before they're going to be pulling anything, because the pulling is definitely going to put them out of good posture. So that's just something that you need to consider. And when you're working with them, just like when you're working with the other ones, and when you're doing the leading exercises and the ground driving exercises, you want to keep yourself in good posture, because when you're leading, again, oh my gosh, keeping up with those little tiny steps was kind of comical, actually.
I bet.
I felt like a miniature ballet dancer right next to him, you know, trying to keep up with those front feet, you know, until I realized I didn't have to really do that all the time. I could go ahead and take it every three steps, and there that would be good enough, you know. Besides, they were starting to look at me kind of funny. What are you doing dancing at my shoulder like this? Does this mean anything? You know? Well, it means that you're not going to spook at anything, because I'm doing some really stupid stuff here, you know. And you're being really cool. You're just looking at me and going, what are you doing? You know? So that's okay. That's okay. We go ahead and we do that hourglass pattern, and we lead through it, and we do all of the different things, prep them for driving. And then when you get into ground driving, that's when they're really going to get the attachment on the lines. That is so important. Going to get the attachment on the line. I'm going to wait. Because you want them to stay light in the bridle and light on the lines. And again, when you're holding your lines, there is a specific way to hold the lines, and it's described in DVD. Well, you can actually see it in DVD number 3. And you do it so that you have all the cues that you're giving are really just coming from your little fingers. And when you have a driving animal, that's what you want. You want the lightest connection possible. That goes for whether you're turning or stopping or whatever. And it always should be done with a squeeze-release motion. So when you're ground driving, you make sure that you're practicing all of this. And again, your feet may have a little trouble following the feet, but your hands can follow their face and the bit really well, because you should be loosening and going forward with your hands as they're going forward. And when their leg comes back, then the line comes back. There's a lot of little tiny steps to this whole thing. And when you're in this hourglass pattern in the open arena and practicing your ground driving that you have already practiced in the round pen, and in the round pen you did forward, walk, trot, don't canter in driving, so we don't practice that for driving. You did S-turns through the middle, you did halt, you did turns on the haunches, and turns on the haunches are important to teach your mini how to bend through his rib cage on a turn and not just, you know, cross over front and back to do a turn with a stiff back. They need to keep that back really flexible and tractable so that they can do their turns in harness between the shafts or on either side of the pole going between them. They need to bend to do those turns. If they start going sideways and crossing over, as you can probably imagine, turning a team could get pretty iffy if they're not turning the same way. When you teach these guys the same thing in the prep groundwork and the way to use their bodies properly in good posture, then they will all move the same way. You will see me, for instance, some of these posts that I've done on Facebook and some of the pictures that I have in my books of me ponying animals, riding one, ponying another right next to them. And the one that I'm ponying is standing exactly mirror image to the side of the one I'm riding. And if you look at their leg movements, they're moving together.
Wow.
Now, this is what you want when you're doing driving teams in harness.
Okay.
And I had the opportunity to go to the World Equestrian Games and watch the top-notch drivers driving their teams and their hitches. And by golly, all those horses were in sync. And when they're trained properly, they will be. because all of their core is established symmetrically around those bones. And in order to do the most efficient movement in harness, they need to be stepping underneath, driving with the hindquarters, elevating the front quarters, and prancing out front and forward to pull that vehicle in the most efficient way. And the thing is, when you teach them things that build their core like that, and they all learn it the same way, then they do it. And whether you're ponying them or whether you're driving a team in harness, you'll see a lot of the pictures that I have of Augie and Spuds. They're actually, of course, Francis and Mirage never drove together because they didn't want to. So I took their advice and never hitched them up. And obviously, when I did try to hitch Mirage up with Franklin, Franklin was steady. Mirage was about as unsteady as you could be. So I saw the futility in that.
There you go.
But, you know, that's just learning lessons.
Right.
But with Augie and Spuds, same prep, same movement, in sync with each other, all the way through the groundwork. And then in order for them to learn to feel what it's like pulling weight, I had them dragging a tire. And how we hitch the tire to the harness is an interesting thing. What you do is you just add baling twine to the end of the traces and then pull it together with loops with a nylon strap and run that through that. And then you have an assistant that handles that. So that if your assistant, if your animals decide to get crazy and run off or something, the assistant can let go of the strap. It will flip right through the baling twine loops and come loose and let them go do what they're going to do. And, of course, you have them tied together. And as I mentioned, I tie them together at the collars so they're not pulling on each other's faces. I don't want to interfere with the integrity of them being light in the bridle. And if they ran off and anything was attached to their bits, that is what would happen. They would
sure.
be pulling against each other, and that's why I don't attach lunge lines to the bits. It's always to some outer source, you know, and when you're leading, it's the halter. When they're hitched together, it's the collars. It's important when you make these decisions that you make sound decisions like this to maintain the integrity of what you're trying to teach them, especially when it comes to the aids, your reins, your seat, in case of riding, your legs, your hands when you want to move them over, teaching them how to move over laterally in their bodies so that both team members bend their bodies the same way, cross their front legs over the same way, and pivot on their hindquarters sort of, kind of, but not really. The pivot that they do on their hindquarters in harness is very similar to the pirouette move that a fourth level dressage mule would do instead of a spin. When you're doing a Western reining spin, they pivot on the inside foot and they plant it in the ground and the outside foot walks around it. When you're doing a pirouette or a turn in harness, they are actually not planting the rear feet. What they're doing is taking tiny little steps on a tiny little circle.
Okay.
And the front legs are doing the sweeping crossover step. It's a very, very minute difference, but it makes the difference in how smooth you're going to turn your vehicle. And believe me, that comes in really handy when you're doing a gambler's choice course and you're going through obstacles, because you have to do minute turns. You can't have your hind feet and your rear feet and your front feet crossing over simultaneously in the same distance, or it's going to turn the wheels on the cart and you may go over a rail. So if you've got them trained to take a tiny little circle with the hind feet, that will make the wheels turn on the vehicle on a tiny little circle, while the front end sweeps around in a much bigger circle. You got to think about what these moves will do in all of these different situations. And especially if you're showing, you want to know these details so you can win, you know, because otherwise, why show?
Right,
you know?
Right.
These are things, like I said, that I just learned. And I've said before, too, you know when your animals are carrying their own posture, when that elbow pull stays loose all the time, they will have points where they're having to have help in good posture, and that's when the elbow pull will be a little bit tight. It's kind of like, you know, before a ballet dancer can really support her own weight in balance out in the open, she has to practice all those things on a bar against the wall. And what she will experience is as she gets better, her hold on that bar gets loosened up to practically nothing when she's supporting all her weight and doing all those moves purely by core strength. All of this balancing of the body and strength in the body and the way the body moves is really important when your animal is in draft and pulling this vehicle, because you don't want them compromising the muscles in their bodies. And if they're pulling unevenly, they will.
Right.
They will create sore spots. They create uneven pressure on the internal organs. They even create imbalance in their feet when their body's unbalanced. If the body is not fed healthy, which is a lot of the case in a lot of these animals, these feeds that have been developed in these laboratories don't know the long-term effect on the animal's entire body and the individual parts. For instance, all of these things that make them look like they got amazing bulk muscle and everything, to me, they look like a skinny animal in a fat suit. And then when you get this weight on them, and they're getting all of this stuff to lubricate their body, and they're telling you, oh, feed flaxseed oil and it'll make his coat really shiny, and or fish oil or this oil or that oil. They're not looking at the feet, because I see a lot of animals out there that have stress rings on their hooves.
Oh, yeah.
And they shouldn't have them. They should have a nice, clean, sleek black hoof, and they should have a nice, clean, sleek white hoof with no lines on them. They should be hard. And people are concerned now, too, about whether or not to shoe your mule. There's, you shouldn't shoe your mule, you know. He's putting nail holes in his feet. The nail holes should not be a problem if he's being fed correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Because by 6 to 8 weeks, those nail holes are on the bottom of his foot, where the farrier is going to come and trim it off.
There you go.
He's going to take that off with the nippers. And then he's got a clean hoof to pound nails through. And if they don't need the new shoes at 6 weeks, go ahead and wait for 8 weeks for those nail holes to get down there so they can be nipped off. So it's the feed that they're getting. It's how long you go between trims. And those feeds will not only make the hoof too soft, but and then it starts cracking too. But the other thing is that the weight is unevenly distributed over the hoof, and the hoof starts to go sideways because it can't support the leg and the weight above it. Then the farrier picks up a foot, or you can even see it in some of them. Those feet are collapsed to the side. They're not symmetrically planted on the ground with a good angle at the pastern and a good angle at the hocks and the hip. They're kind of sideways, and when they move, they wiggle. And when they do that, you see this wobbling, and they call it paddling. You know, you hear of animals paddling.
Right.
They're doing it because their feet aren't hitting the ground in a balanced fashion.
Yeah.
Because a hoof is not balanced. And if they have conformational defects like sickle hocks or cow hocks, sickle hocks, any of those kinds of problems, a lot of this balancing of the core will take care of those and get it as straight as they can possibly do, given their own individual structure. And that way their movement will be as correct as it can be. And the soreness that occurs in their bodies will be identifiable because they will be moving as best they can for their own structure. So it shouldn't compromise them. And it's like rock and roll. They didn't have perfect conformation, but like rock, there was not much of anything I could really do for him given that hip injury.
Right.
I thought it was a fracture on the pelvis, but it turned out to be a completely shattered hip joint. But side bones and ring bone and kissing spine that he had was not any further compromised by the exercises we did because it put him in his own ideal posture. So he was moving forward. He was stopping and propelling with his hindquarters underneath his torso, over the right under the center of gravity, so it didn't do any harm, which means that all of this disproportionate conformation that he had was working as ideally as it possibly could. It was only him moving incorrectly that did the damage. Now, with Roll, he had ring bone and side bones in 3 feet and a little bit of arthritis in his hocks and a little bit of kiss and spine going on. And he did not have any problems at all. Once I got him good in the hourglass pattern, he actually graduated to the round pen. And when he was in the round pen at first, he was wobbling. His back feet would twist when he was trying to propel himself forward. But that's because he wasn't picking them up, bending the joints, and setting them down under his torso.
Yeah.
And that's what I had to teach him to do. And once I got him to do that in the round pen, then I was able to add my weight to him and ride him. And I rode him for 8 years, and he did fine. I never tried to canter him, because I knew that added stress would probably collapse the frame I had built with him.
Sure.
Because he was so old. He was 18 years old when I started, and he was 27 years old when he died.
Oh, my.
So I was riding him between the ages of 20 and 27, and he was moving in good posture, and he could walk and trot and look like a dressage mule. He didn't have the core strength down there that he could have had he been started when he was younger, but it wasn't doing any damage. But that's what you've got to look at. When you're looking at your mini, you know, they're little and they're easy to train because you can bully them around a little bit and you can pull on the lines and make them stop if you have to and drag on the lines to make them turn. But that doesn't mean they're doing it in good posture. And that does mean it's going to make them sore eventually. And they're going to get resentful. And they're going to be resentful for driving, which is really about the only thing that a mini can really be useful for. Other than in-hand trail classes, you can do that. You can do showmanship classes for minis. They offer those too. But even in those classes, if they're not moving correctly, they're going to be judged critically by a judge that knows what a really well-conformed animal needs to move like, needs to look like. It's important that everything that your mini learns, even something as simple as halting, he needs to learn, and he will, in the hourglass pattern, that when he's asked to stop, he's also asked to square up, put equal weight over all 4 feet, and hold that position. Because that's what builds his core strength in balance. That's where it all starts. It's really important that anytime you take your mini out, you practice doing leading training exactly as you do in that hourglass pattern so that those repetitive movements are reinforced. And every time you stop, you wait. You know, if you have to square him up, do it. But he should, after his hourglass work, he should be, so all you got to do is turn to his shoulder, look at him, and go, well, square up. And he'll just put his feet in the right position. Then he knows he's going to get his oats. So he'll do it. And the other thing is they can get really fidgety. And like I've said, really important communication tool is getting down to their level and look at them face to face, eye to eye. So you're looking soul to soul. That's why I throw this step in where I don't actually hook them up. But what I do is they've had all their groundwork. They've been ground driving in the open, in their harness and everything. They've been introduced to it. They've been introduced to tarps and all of these little things that you throw at them during obstacle training. But one step I do add is when they're in the workstation, I will bring the cart that they're going to be attached to into the workstation, tie them up next to it, and then fit their harness and make sure that it fits. Go ahead and put the harness on and everything in there. And in this case, I was training Spuds and Augie to be a team, although I ground drove them separately to get them used to everything, the lines and everything. I did the team stuff too. So I did separate first and then together as a team. And then when I was fitting their harness, I was on the floor, on my knees, down to their level, and walking around them on my knees. And sometimes knee pads help. I tell you, if you've got a long time to do that, it might be advisable to put knee pads on because it can get kind of bad. I noticed that when I was vacuuming five of them, too, that having the knee pads really helped that way. But they do appreciate it when you're down there. And then it's easier to adjust the harness properly when you've got the right angles on the straps. If you're doing it from up above, sometimes you end up getting straps too tight. But if you're down on their level, like you are with your saddle animals, and you're working with a girth, you're almost eye to eye with it, and your arms are there, and you can kind of gauge how tight it is and what's snug and what's tight, adjust it accordingly. And so you want to do the same thing. And when you're down on eye level, too, the other thing that you can see is where that girth is from that harness. Is it on the swell of the belly, or is it right on that really thin skin right behind the forearms? You don't want it there, so you got to make sure. And if you're down on their level, you're going to see where it is. And you're going to be able to make sure that it's on the swell of the belly where the skin's a little thicker.
That is the correct answer.
That's an important consideration as well. So we go ahead and we fit the harness, and then what we do is we get our assistant to help out, because it'll take two people to do this. And I, generally speaking, go ahead and have the cart facing forward between the two hitch rails that I have, and I attach cross ties to them. So that when I take the minis over to put them on either side of the pole coming off of the single trees, I'll put one on there and one mini on his side and hitch him to one of the cross ties on a halter. Then he's tied to the other mini, and then I'll line up the other mini on the other side of the shaft, the pole going between a team, just to be clear. And then I will put the other mini on the other side of it, and I will hitch the other cross tie to that mini so that the minis are both in the cross ties as if they were harnessed to the cart, but to the marathon cart, but they're not hitched up yet. Then I go ahead and I hitch up the traces to the single tree and actually do hitch them. Now, one thing I might mention at this time is that we have driven these minis singly. And the other thing that I've done when I drive them double is I have had single lines on both minis, not split lines. You know how they give you split lines to drive a team so that you're only holding two lines in your hands, and halfway down the lines splits, and one side goes to the left side on both animals, and one side goes to the right side on both animals. I have discovered that if you train in those split lines, it does not give you the lightness in the bridle from your hands that they will learn to do when you have a full set of lines on both animals.
Right.
So I drive in those complete set of lines for quite some time before I will actually drive in split lines. So I make sure that they're hitched up, they're both in their single lines, and then while they're hitched up in the cross ties, I will climb up into the cart, and I will take the lines in my hands, and I will wiggle the lines on the right side. So they're both, I make sure they're even, and I wiggle them on both on the right side, I wiggle them on the left side, and I wiggle them symmetrically both at the same time for the back, and then I let them loose. And that's the kind of stuff that I practice with them while they're standing still and they're not going anywhere. So they know that I still have connection in my hands to both of them and individually in each of their bridles. One's on top of my hand and one's on the bottom of my hands. Then when I decide to go ahead and hitch them up, we go into the open arena and I make sure that it's enclosed. It's a big driving arena that I have and it's mostly grass. And I take two assistants with me this time. And I put one on each side. They're wearing their halters, so the lead ropes are attached to the halters, not the bits, so they can still feel my hands. Now I'm out in this big open area, and where I took them to the vehicle the last time, now I'm going to bring the vehicle to them. So the guys are going to hold them like they're in the cross ties, and I'm going to come up behind them, dragging this thing behind them, and they're going to hear it clunking and the wheels turning and all of that. And the guy, I'm going to be talking to them, and the guys are going to hold them steady like they were on the cross ties, and they're talking to them too. And when they're holding still, the guys both have fanny packs, and they can both reward them for standing still as the vehicle approaches. Then I bring that pole right up through the middle and put it between them, and then I will go ahead and hitch one first, one side, then the other. They're not moving. They have learned how to stand still from all of this groundwork we've been doing, and they get every time something rattles and an ear flicks or something, then they don't move. They get rewarded for it. But that's how closely you have to watch them. Was there a noise? Did he flick an ear?
Right.
Is he looking back at it but not moving? Did he move a foot? If he moved a foot, he gets nothing.
Mm.
It's that meticulous.
Okay.
It's that detailed. Because when I get them in harness, I don't want them doing anything but what they learned. And as you well know, mules and donkeys learn exactly what we teach them.
That is the correct answer.
Sure.
I learned not to make too many mistakes because they're not fun. You know, oh, gee, how cute is this little miniature donkey? He's just a baby. He's jumping on me. I think I'll give him a hug.
Right.
Well, how are you going to feel when he now weighs 100-something pounds and he's knocking you down? No. You don't encourage behavior like that. It may be cute in the beginning, but you don't want to accept it then either. So you teach them to stay on all 4 feet. You keep equal weight over all 4 feet, and you do what I want you to do. And that's not to say that miniatures can't learn tricks later. If they learn their good manners first,
right,
and they adhere to their good manners first, then what you can do is you give them a reward later when they're on the lead rope, and then you step back and you've got a whip. And you can touch them under the chin, and you can say, now I want you to rear up on your back legs. You encourage them to do that by touching them underneath their jaw with a whip and saying, go up, go mm-hmm. up. And they may bounce the first time, but you reward that. And then you'll get more elevation each time. But you're gonna break those tricks down to all those little steps, too. And you're going to put yourself in a position where you're not going to get hurt by it.
Sure.
And they can learn to do the Spanish walk, for instance. You can get out on your lead rope a little bit and lean forward with your dressage whip, which is a little bit longer, but it still affords you to be somewhat close and touch them right behind the knees, and they'll learn to lift their feet up higher. But you gotta have the, you gotta start with the good manners, because otherwise they're gonna think they can do anything anytime. But they need to learn, well, I can do anything anytime if mom asks for it, you know. And I'll get oats if they do it like that, you know, so that's what you wanna do. We're gonna go ahead and hitch them up, and the guys are going to hold them there, and I'm going to climb up into the cart the same way I did when we were in the tack barn. And I'm going to do the same kind of work on my lines that I did in the tack barn to let them see what we were going to do. It's just, it's repetitious of a lesson they have already learned. So we're going to just do a little bit more. They know what walk-on means because of the ground driving. I put the guys out there on either side of them. I tell them to keep their lines, their side. Now, I don't want them tight while I'm hitching. I want them to put slack in their lead ropes so that the animals are standing still and waiting for my command. And I'm going to tell the minis, walk on. And I'm going to let the lines loose so they can walk on. And we're going to walk maybe 3, 4, 5 steps. And then I'm going to say, and whoa, and I'm going to put pressure on the lines, a squeeze and a release. If they don't stop, I'll squeeze and release it again. If they still don't stop, then I tell the boys and they pull on the lead ropes and become the cross ties.
All right.
And so we just kind of move through that open arena in multiple lessons that way, and eventually we work in the turns. We make sure that they are gradual turns. When they stop after a while, we'll go forward, forward, forward for a very long time. And I don't ask for a back until I am absolutely solid in going forward, halting, and turning, you know, going forward and turning. They've gotten used to the harness. They know the pressure points on the harness and everything. And the pressure point that they have to pull from in a team harness is a little tricky because it's coming from the collar. And they need to go step back through the collar. And they'll get the pressure in the collar to push the marathon cart backwards as a team. Now, that's not necessarily true if you're driving single. Comes from their breeching.
Okay.
And the breeching is tight right around their butts. But see, when you're driving a team, sometimes you don't even have breeching back there. So it's coming from the collars, and they're pulling forward from the chest, and they're pulling forward from the collars, but they're also pulling backwards from the collars.
Okay.
So they get a little anxious when you ask them to back up and they don't have the strength or the intelligence to know what that means. They need to be able to do it easily, because if you're pulling with a team, that means that your cart is a little bit heavy. They need to be able to back that easily in order not to get all frazzled about it. And I find that if you just do all your forward motion, halts, and turns before you ask them to back, and do it over several lessons, which can quite literally take months, I say 3 to 6 months, to get them really adept and harnessed that way, then it's okay to ask them to back. Before that, just don't get yourself in a situation where you have to back up and back out of it. You know, that's why I have a huge driving arena, so we can go forward, go forward, go forward. And if we get a little too close to the fence or something where you might be tempted to back up, you don't really have to. You turn your animals, the shafts turn with you, and if they turn through their rib cage the way they're supposed to, they'll be able to take that pole away from the rail by turning the same way and turning the wheels right where the wheels are. And that's a really important thing. I might add at this point too that when you're doing your ground driving, I have an interim step that I call G over and high over, and that's where I turn them. I stand in the middle like I'm the wheels of a vehicle, and I ask them to G over, go to the right, and just do the little steps with their back feet and the long sweeping steps with the front feet, And so then I can keep them on the lines and barely have to go forward at all. I can stay where I am and have them do a circle around me, first to the right, then to the left. And they learn to bend their bodies that way, so that when you actually do that, when they're attached to a vehicle and you get yourself in a position like you're facing a fence, you can just pivot those wheels and take them away from the fence, and you're just doing a gradual turn, and you don't have to back up.
Okay.
Now, this is the same premise when those big draft animals are pushing a wagon backwards into a loading dock. See, they need to know how to do this pivot with the bending through their torsos and moving with their team members, because they have these exhibits out at Bishop all the time where these six-up hitches back the wagon squarely in to the side of the rail of the fence as if it was a loading dock, and then they will show you how to pivot a team of six or eight mules so that the only thing on the wagon that pivots is the wheel in front. The back of the wagon stays right up against the fence, and the animals just do a 180 just right across in front of that thing from one fence on one side to the fence on the other side, while the wheels right there under the front of the wagon just pivot. You don't think about things like that unless you have experience with it. And sometimes you can kind of get away with things, you know, if you do get stuck, yeah, you can back a couple steps and do a kind of a awkward turn out of it and stuff like that. But it doesn't look very pretty in a show ring, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
You know, it looks prettier, and it doesn't look pretty in an exhibition if you're just doing an exhibition for a show either. So when you're doing this stuff, it's important to know all these little details so that you can have your animal moving the way that they need to, and if they're in good posture, that they really will. The other thing I might talk about, too, is once they're in harness, is now you have a chance to driving a vehicle in the hourglass pattern. You just have to make the hourglass pattern bigger. But you still, they will recognize the pattern, and they will recognize all the elements of the pattern. You can practice your turns going forward, practicing turns, practicing halting between the cones, getting their reward. You can have your assistants go ahead and give the reward so you don't have to get out of the vehicle. Or you can teach them to stand still and have your assistants there in the beginning to hold them still while you attach the reins to the vehicle in a taut fashion, but enough slack to give them a little bit of slack so that it's the squeeze-release action, and then you can climb out of the vehicle and go to the front and give them the rewards yourself.
Mm.
And you practice all these little things because you're not always going to have somebody to hang on to them when they're hitched.
Sure.
And if something happens and you got to jump out of that vehicle, you want your animals not to have to be ground tied to a rock.
you know? Yeah.
So they should learn to stand still. Ground tying is not really ground tying any more than neck reining is neck reining. Neck reining,
right.
you do it with your hand up the center and you move them with your seat.
Right.
Ground tying is when you're not actively on the reins, they stay where they are. And they need to learn that. And they will learn that. They're really very good at learning all of these things when you're clear and consistent and repetitive as to the way you do it. Frequent halts and rewards are always good. And you always check your harness as you're adjusting it. And when you're first starting out, you always check your harness when you're taking it off, because something could have run amok. Something could have been weakened. Something could have broke. You want to make sure that everything is getting checked all the time. That's just going to keep you all safe and keep your animal from any anxiety, because a lot of times they know those things before we even do. They can just feel it. Something's different.
Yeah.
Something isn't quite right. So you kind of do that.
That is the correct answer.
If putting the halter on is kind of an inconvenience with a, and it is with a mini, not so much with the older animals because their heads are bigger.
Sure.
But when you use that drop nose band that's a dog collar when you're training, can't use it in the shows. They won't allow it. But in training, you certainly can. What I did was on the dog collar, it's got that place where you can attach the leash. So you can have your assistants attach your lead ropes on the dog collar, on the dog collar rings. If you're using a bridle that has a nose band, they also sell brass rings that you can slide into the nose band, and you can hook your lead ropes to that. Just don't try to stop them if they try to bolt on you, because you'll break the nose band before they ever stop. They're so strong, they'll snap your nose band if it's leather.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I told you before. If you run into that kind of stuff, just let go. And if they're attached to a cart, that's why you have two assistants. So you not only have one assistant per animal, but you also, if they're not going to probably bolt at the same time, one is going to instigate it and the other one's going to follow.
Right.
So you just tell your assistant, if the one bolts, then you get on, the one that's got the bolter, come down hard on him.
Sure.
The one that's got the one that's going to be the follower, make him help you drag that other one backwards. Mm-hmm. Then you got three on one. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And it does work because they've both been trained to be good. The second one is going, this is not the right thing to do. Then he's going to look at the handler that he's got on his side, and he's going to go, I think I'll stay with him. And even if you're just standing still, you get still got three on one, and you got two holding steady and one that is pulling hard and doing a squeeze release or a jerk release kind of thing on them. And you can usually stop them that way because you really don't want them to run away with the vehicle. That would
right.
be a really bad
right.
bad thing. But I haven't run into that problem yet doing it this way.
Okay.
If there's a question with a bigger mule or anything that's in harness, I go ahead and use two assistants anyway.
Oh, you bet.
You know, because
yeah.
it's just safe. And it's, you know, and it's the thing to do because, like I said, when these long ears run off in harness, they're really scared. And they think it can happen again. They don't see it as a problem that they brought on themselves. They think you did it to them.
Mm,
you
right,
know?
Right.
They blame everything on you. Because they're perfect, don't you know? So
you bet, and you can't argue with them either.
Well, absolutely not. No, there's no arguing with these guys. Negotiating, however, that's totally doable.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And if your mini has any problems at all, having two assistants to help with that is definitely the thing to do because you always want to set them up for success.
That is the correct answer.
You know, and you got your hands full with the lines because remember, we're training with four lines with teams. When you've only got one in the shafts, it's not quite as complicated.
Sure.
But when you've got two, you need to know how to hold those lines so you've got a direct connection to both of them. What I usually do is I have one on the top, one on the bottom on my right hand, one on the top, one on my bottom on my left hand, because that's it's going to make a difference on the turns. So when I put pressure on it, I have to have both right reins in my right hand, both left reins in my left
right,
hand. Are
right.
you envisioning that?
Yeah.
You know? So that when you turn, they're both getting the even amount of pull on the side they need to turn to. And you keep those lines even. You don't get them uneven. You got to keep them even in your hands. And they will get uneven. And this is part of your task as that is directly learning your reinsmanship. You've got to get these movements done in a logical, sequential way, but during these movements, one of your animals may move a little differently than the other one and change the pressure that you have in your hand on him, but not on the other one. So you have to be ready to reach across. If they're turning to the right, for instance, and the one on the right leaves you more slack, and the one on the left is getting a little tight, you got to let out the left rein that goes to the one on the left a little bit, and then you have to reach over and grab the excess line and pull it through your hands to tighten up the line on the right one. This is kind of a juggling act with these reins, and it happens continuously while they're moving.
Right, right. I've got a friend that is he has a good mindset in working with horses and mules, and he's helped me quite a bit when I've had some issues. He bought this really nice horse. But the deal was that the minis had to go with the horse, so it was a package deal. Well, that's a red flag, because when the minis, anytime you open up the stall door and let them out, they would attack you. They would come running at you and bite your knees and your ankles. And
they think it's funny.
Oh, yeah. And so he tried to
then
convince
me. They love to chase you.
Right. He tried to convince me that I needed those. I was like, no, I don't think I need those.
No, that was a wise decision. It's one thing when you've got donkeys, and it's quite another, like I said, when you've got mules that are half horse, half donkey. They have the strength and intelligence to get very creative about how they're going to get defensive with you, or how they're going to get aggressive with you. So I think that mini mules are probably the most dangerous kinds of animals to train, because they're so small they can duck in and out of anything they want. So one minute you may be facing the biting, and then the next split second you've got a leg going up your thigh or something, you know.
Right.
It is hard. And age is another thing that's very important. Might have been able to accept those two mini mules if they were 6 months old.
Right.
You know, and you had somewhere to start with, but somebody was trying to get rid of those guys, and there were reasons for that. And when you've got something that's that resistant and that creative and that strong about their way of dealing with you, your chances, your odds of getting along with them and being able to rely on them and consider them dependable is next to nothing. You know, it is important to pay attention to all these little steps that I've been outlined. Every time you end the lesson, keep your assistant at your mini's head. And when you're unhitching the bridle, when you're hitching up, the bridle is the last thing to go on. And when you're taking it off, your bridle is the last thing to come off. But you have that assistant at his head, and how you just go ahead and unharness, and you do it in the same order that you harnessed. That's all outlined in DVD number 3 of my video series. They've learned to stand still. And once he's hitched, make sure to have your mini stand where he is while you come to him. You reward him, and then you lead him away. This is how he will learn to wait for you and not become antsy and uncontrollable. We talked about before about when we were putting leg wraps on, and how I put leg wraps on inside the trailer to get them to stand still. And you always take the leg wraps off in the trailer before you lead them out, too, because otherwise they might double over on you because they get antsy. They want to do what they want to do. And they do the same thing in harness. They're going to go, I'm all done, I want to get done. And they might be dancing around while you're starting to do the last strap or something like that. And this is just a way, when you teach them, once he's unhitched and he's standing there, he has to stand there until you come to him, you reward him, you untie him after the reward, and lead him away. And this is how, again, I will say, he'll learn to wait for you, and he won't become antsy and uncontrollable. Routinely, practicing good manners, setting up the environment for success, and approaching your mini with a calm and deliberate attitude will all help him to become a quiet, safe, and reliable driving animal, as well as a wonderful animal for fun and games, just about anything you can dream up to do with them.
Let's clarify this one more time about the bridle. So when you're hitching them up, you're harnessing them, the bridle is the last thing that you put on.
They are tied up by their halter.
Okay.
Might mention at this time, too, that when I tie my animals and I have to spend extended time with them at the hitch rail, I have either chains or a tightly woven nylon rope attached to the hitch rail, and it's one that they can't chew up and discard like they can the lead ropes.
Right.
So I lead them up to the hitch rail, take off their lead rope, and put it well out of their reach so I can get it later, and then just use these what I call ties on the hitch rail ties.
Okay.
And I use them like that. And I harness them with those chains or ties, and they're attached to the halter. And like I said, the halter is the last thing to come off. You go ahead and put the harness on them, and I usually will harness my mules when I have them tied outside at the wash rack. And they will be tied by their halter. I will have the cart over by nearby, but not right on top of them. Put the harness on, then bring the cart up behind them and go ahead and hitch them to the cart while they're still in their halter, tied to the hitch rail. And then I will go ahead and put the halter around the neck so they're still tied to the hitch rail, put on the harness bridle, put on the lines, drag the lines through the loops and everything in the harness, and drape them over the cart before they are let loose. And I will get an assistant to let them loose once I have climbed in the cart and have the lines in my hands.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's all safety stuff. And then when you're done, you do the same thing. You bring your assistant over, and you go ahead and put the halter around the neck, tie them up by that, but you don't tie up by the bridle. It's there. And you take the lines off the harness, and you detach that, and you just do everything in reverse order. You undo all the straps, take the cart away, take the harness off. Then you go up to the front where your assistant's standing by the head, just making sure everything's in control. And you go ahead, and now the halter is tied to the hitch rail tie. Now you want to put the lead rope on the halter, and you go ahead and unattach the hitch rail tie, and you go ahead and make sure the bridle throat latch is undone, the nose bands are undone, and you go ahead and put your arm over the neck and grab the strap, the crown strap of the halter. And then you go ahead and pull the bridle off with your right hand, and then just put it over the hitch rail, grab your halter from the other side, and now you've got them in a loop because you've got a hold of the crown strap, and you've got a hold of the buckle of the halter on your other, so they're encased in your arms, and you just lead that nose band right up to the nose, bring the buckle to the crown strap, put on the halter, and you got them right there.
Wow. That just explains it all right there. That's pretty cool.
And that's the way you do it all the time.
Yeah.
When you're grooming and you put on your bridles when you're going to ride, you do the same thing. You do it exactly the same way. And see, every time you do things exactly the same way, your animal is able to predict what you're up to and what you're going to do, so he doesn't get nervous about any of it, and he's 100% compliant because you do it the same way every time, whether you're riding or driving or what, whether you're in the open, whether you're in a confined area or what. It's all done exactly the same way.
Very well said, because when you do enter the show arena, things are different. It's a different atmosphere. You want to make sure that your animal is very settled in the harness.
And most of all, attentive to you.
Yes.
If he gets nervous, you want him to look to you and go, what do I do now, Mom?
Right. Awesome.
And everything that we're talking about here today can be found in my books, Training Mules and Donkeys, A Logical Approach to Long Ears, Training Without Resistance, Equine Management and Donkey Training, Equus Revisited, and A Guide to Raising and Showing Mules, and all of my video series.
Meredith's website is lucky3ranch.com, and you can call her at 1-800-816-7566.
Gotta go. My mule is looking for me.
Mule Talk is an Every Cowgirl Stream production.